Hey everyone, welcome back for another deep dive.
Yeah.
You know, we always get amazing stuff sent in from our listeners, and this week is no exception. You've sent us some really thought-provoking articles on extreme weather,
Oh, yeah.
and especially about how it hits home, literally, when it comes to things like housing
Yeah.
and the effects on young people. So
Absolutely.
we're going to take a deep dive into this and hopefully uncover some insights that go way beyond those, like,
Yeah.
Those shocking headlines that we're all kind
Yeah,
of bombarded with these days.
it's so easy to see those flooded streets on the news and think, oh, that's awful, and then kind of move on with your day, you know. But what these sources do so well, I think, is connect us to the long-term effects of what happens after that initial shock wears off. And, you know, thinking about the people who are often hit the hardest, those who can least afford it.
Yeah, and I think even just that initial shock,
Yeah.
like, we can't downplay that either. We're talking about people's homes being damaged, power outages,
Absolutely.
having to relocate sometimes. Like, I mean, just the thought of that,
It's overwhelming.
it's overwhelming.
Yeah, and that's where some of this research you send over is really valuable because, you know, we often talk about vulnerable populations, but this really highlights how low-income households are dealing with this perfect storm of vulnerability when it comes to extreme weather. Think about it. You're already a living paycheck to paycheck, and then a flood hits or a wildfire. You might be in an older home that's less equipped to withstand that kind of damage, maybe fewer resources for repairs. And often, affordable housing is located in areas that are more prone to flooding in the first place. So it becomes this awful cycle.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking, honestly. It's like recovering from a disaster is a privilege that so many people can't afford.
Yeah.
And it's not even just the financial strain of it all. One of the studies you sent actually mentioned an increase in like stress, anxiety, even PTSD in adults and young people
Right.
after these extreme weather events.
And I mean, how could there not be? These events are traumatic. There's that fear, the loss of control, the uncertainty about what comes next. Of course, it takes a toll on your mental well-being.
Yeah. And it just makes you wonder, like, what does that do to a young person who's already going through so many changes and developments in their lives?
Right.
Like, what are the long-term effects of this?
Exactly. And that's a huge concern. Think about it. Adolescence is already this time of incredible change,
Right.
right? The brain is still developing, figuring out how to regulate emotions, how to navigate the world. Then on top of that, you add displacement, the stress of having to rebuild, maybe even witnessing your family struggle. It can really throw a wrench into those developmental processes. That's why having those strong family and community support networks is absolutely crucial for young people in these situations. It can really make all the difference.
It always comes back to that human element, doesn't it? Like we talk about bricks and mortar and
Yeah.
rebuilding, but it's really about people and communities coming together and supporting each other.
Absolutely. And that community support, it's amazing how often it leads to these incredibly practical solutions, which, speaking of,
Okay.
you sent over some really interesting building guides.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you know this, but concrete has actually become kind of a secret weapon in flood-prone
Okay,
areas.
see, I've got to be honest with you. When I think flood resistant, I'm not sure concrete is the first thing that pops into my mind.
Right. It's not as glamorous as some high-tech solution or anything,
Right.
but concrete has some inherent strengths that make it surprisingly effective. For starters, it's naturally water-resistant.
So it's like a fortress against the elements.
Exactly. And we're not just talking about basic foundations here. Think basements, pools, even those massive coastal defenses you see, they're often made of concrete because it can withstand incredible force without crumbling.
Okay, yeah, that's pretty impressive. Sounds
Yay.
like they've really thought this through.
Yeah.
And you mentioned something earlier about the British standard BS. What was it?
BS 85500.204.
Yeah.
Sounds like a robot from the future, right?
A little bit. But seriously, what is that?
Basically, it's like a set of guidelines for flood-resistant design and materials. They use it in the UK, and guess what? Concrete gets a big thumbs up.
So not just any concrete structure will do. It needs to be built with flooding in mind from the get-go.
Right. And there are some really clever strategies involved. Your Auckland guide actually talks about two main approaches: dry proofing and wet proofing.
Okay, now those sound familiar, but just remind me, what are those again?
Okay, so think of dry proofing as the no water allowed approach, We're talking elevated doorways, watertight seals around windows, using materials that basically laugh in the face of water damage, like our good friend concrete.
So build it like a bunker, basically.
Pretty much. But you can imagine trying to waterproof every single nook and cranny can get pretty expensive.
Yeah.
Which is where wet proofing comes in.
Which is more like, okay, some water might sneak in, but we're ready for it.
You got it. It's about minimizing damage, not necessarily blocking every single drop. So things like tile floors instead of carpet, flood-resistant insulation, raising those electrical outlets nice and high.
Smart. So it's working with the water, not just against it.
Precisely. And this is where understanding your local flood risk becomes so crucial. Remember that Auckland Council flood viewer you mentioned?
Oh, yeah. That tool was amazing. You can literally zoom in on your neighborhood and see the flood risk level.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
That kind of information can help you make much smarter decisions about building or even just simple landscaping changes. Like using permeable paving instead of concrete can make a huge difference in how much water your property absorbs during a heavy rainfall.
Right. Every little bit helps. But let's be real for a second. A lot of homes out there, they just weren't built with floods in mind. And we've got that image you shared, the one showing the junction between a wall and a concrete slab.
Yeah.
Even if the concrete itself is tough.
Right.
What about those weak points where things connect?
Ugh. The notorious wall slab junction. The Achilles heel of many a structure. You're right. Those joints can be really tricky.
Because even with all this talk about concrete being water resistant,
yeah.
That image really shows how water can still kind of sneak in through those joints. It's like a game of whack-a-mole.
Yeah.
So what's the solution there?
You've hit on a critical point. Traditionally, builders have tried to seal those joints with things like tapes, sealants, or membranes. But as that image so vividly illustrates, those methods are often prone to failure. Over time, they can deteriorate, they can crack, or just get pushed out of place, creating a pathway for water to seep in. And you sent over some information about a potential solution to this exact problem. Do you remember?
Wait, are you talking about that stack cell system? That sounded pretty interesting.
That's the one, and it tackles the problem in a very clever way.
Remind me how that stack cell thing works again.
Okay, so instead of trying to seal that wall slab junction after the concrete's already been poured,
right.
The stack cell system, it actually becomes part of the pouring process.
Oh.
It's like this preformed channel.
Okay.
Made of this really durable plastic,
uh-huh.
And it gets embedded right into that joint, that vulnerable joint, as the concrete sets around it.
So it's like you're building the watertight seal directly into the structure itself.
Exactly. It becomes one solid piece.
Wow.
No more relying on those tapes or sealants that can fail over time.
That's brilliant. Why isn't everyone using this? It sounds like a game changer, especially in those areas that are prone to heavy rainfall, flooding, all of that.
Right. It's the million-dollar question, isn't it? And it really speaks to, I think, a broader issue when it comes to adopting new technologies in the construction industry in general.
You mean like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it?
Well, there's that, but cost is a huge factor too, right? New technologies, new materials, they can be more expensive up front.
Yeah. So even if it saves you money in the long run, that initial price tag can be scary.
Exactly. And that takes us back to, I think, that bigger idea we were discussing earlier, the need to think long term, you know?
Playing the long game. Like maybe spending a bit more on a flood resilient home now saves you a world of financial and emotional stress down the line.
Absolutely. And it's not just about individual choices either. Imagine if, like, building codes encouraged or even required more resilient construction methods in areas that are known to be flood prone.
Or what if insurance companies offered discounts for those homes? Because they're less risky to insure.
Now you're thinking. It's about creating a system where choosing those resilient options is the more obvious choice.
Right.
And it all circles back, I think, to something like that Auckland guide and that fantastic flood viewer tool.
Yes, such a cool resource.
It really highlights how important readily available information is. What if every homeowner everywhere had access to that kind of detailed flood risk assessment for their property?
Hmm.
It could totally change how we think about building, buying, even just maintaining our homes.
Wow. We have covered so much ground in this deep dive.
I know, right?
I mean, we're talking about that initial shock of those extreme weather events,
yeah.
To the long-term mental health impacts.
Right.
Now these incredible innovations in building and design, it's a lot, but it also feels hopeful, you know? Like, yeah, the challenges are huge, but so is our capacity to kind of adapt and innovate and figure things out.
I completely agree. It's so easy to get overwhelmed by all the doom and gloom out there.
Yeah.
But seeing this kind of ingenuity gives me hope.
Yeah, it really is inspiring. So to everyone listening, we definitely encourage you to check out all those resources we talked about today, starting with that Auckland Council flood viewer. Even if you don't live in Auckland, it's a great example. Understand your risk, ask those questions, and let's all work towards a more resilient future.
Because as we've seen today, even small changes can make a world of difference.
Couldn't have said it better myself. And on that note, we'll wrap up this deep dive. Until next time, stay curious, everyone.